are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Man, Hanley just pisses me off right now. I wish I could go back to February Rob and tell him stay away from Hanley, gonna suck.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I can quickly set up a PayPal account if anybody wants to transfer me money for no random reason.
I already have a PayPal account if people want to send me money.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
What was your strategy? And what went wrong? Because it's gone horribly wrong for you.
Well, thank you so much.
You're really soft-pedaling that.
Yeah.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Chuck and Darius. Darius, how you doing?
I'm doing well. It's extremely hot here in the UK, so for once, instead of complaining about the rain, we get to complain about how hot it is instead.
Please tell me in Celsius, and I'll try to do the math in my head.
But it's been about 30, 31 where I work today, but it's 34 down in London.
Okay, so that is approximately like 96? I don't know.
That sounds about right.
That was a complete guess. Chuck, how you doing?
I am doing okay. I'm especially persnickety today. I've gone through like 3 straight weeks of having every halfway decent 2-start option get blown up and beaten like redheaded stepchildren, and so you expect more venom than usual, which is unfortunate for Rob because he's going to think I'm like this all the time.
Well, we think you're like that all the time, so don't worry about that at all. And we've got, you just mentioned our guest. We're doing a different kind of episode. Usually we just talk about players and go back and forth. Today we're talking more strategy, and for that we've brought on a fantastic guest, Rob Silver, who is the reigning NFBC main event champion. Rob, welcome to the show.
It's great to be on. The reality is you just wanted people who subscribe to the metric system to slowly take over the podcast, obviously. I'm calling from Canada. So I'll drop Celsius, I'll drop kilometers, I'll drop all kinds of stuff that most folks listening have no idea what I'm talking about.
We're trying to broaden our international appeal.
There you go. You know? Very good. No, it's great to be on. Great to chat some baseball today.
Definitely. Let people know where you can kind of be reached, and then tell people a little bit about yourself and all that you do.
Sure. On Twitter at Rob Silver. I apologize in advance if you don't like Canadian politics. You'll hate half the tweets that I send out, but the other half will be about random baseball stuff. And yeah, I mean, I won the NFBC last year, which was awesome. We'll talk about that. I'm a lawyer, but I've been playing high stakes fantasy baseball and football for over a decade now. So that's me in the most nutshell of nutshells.
And then you also play in the League of Leagues, correct?
I do. So for those who don't know, the League of Leagues is Jonah Carey, great Canadian, great baseball writer, great guy, invention. So what the League of Leagues is it's a 3-sport-in-1 fantasy draft. So we had the League of League draft in March in Vegas, and you draft baseball, football, basketball all in one. So if you want your first 10 picks to all be basketball players, go hard. And you can trade between sports. So if I want to trade Clayton Kershaw for Russ Westbrook, that's how the League of Leagues rolls. And then it's total points across all 3 sports over the season. So it's keeper league now. They've kind of transitioned. First time they did this, they did a 2-year cycle. Now they're going every year, but it's keeper league. So it's a ton of fun, and I'm in my partner in the League of Leagues is Vlad Settler from RotoWire and elsewhere. So we're having a good time so far. We're doing pretty well in baseball, and We'll see how the rest of the year goes.
Well, we'll definitely talk about that because Chuck and I are in our own version of that league, except for we start our draft in July. Our first sport for the season or for the league is football. And so I'll be interested to talk to you about your guys' strategy and how you went about putting together a roster. So
for sure,
we'll get to that towards the end of the episode. But first, I want to talk some NFBC. Of course, having you on, you're kind of an expert now, I guess, in the NFBC format, having won the main event, which is a very difficult thing to do. What are the main differences from the NFBC format than your traditional formats, and how do you strategically approach it differently?
So for those who know nothing about the NFBC, the NFBC main event are 15-team straight drafts. So in and of itself, the drafts themselves are no different than any other 15-team mixed league draft. The key difference is for the overall prize, which is $125,000 US, which depending where the pound is, I think is now like 37 pounds or something. I'm joking. So you draft your 15-team league. You're competing against 14 other guys in your league. But there are last year 450 teams in the overall. So the way the overall works is they rank you in every category. So if you have the most home runs of all 450 teams, you get 450 points, second 449 and on down. But again, you're only competing against your 14 other teams in your league for free agents, for everything else. So as you can imagine, that creates all kinds of dynamics. And from a strategy perspective, the thing I tell people, and we can get deep into strategy, but in the first instance, win your league. Don't go into the draft thinking, I need to beat 449, or this year, I think it's 465 teams, so 464 teams. Win your league. If you don't win your league, you have no chance at the overall. So don't go in. This is not a daily GPP. A lot of people I see make the mistake of approaching it as if it's, I'm going for $1 million. I need a massive high variance, massive upside lineup. That's the only way I could possibly win $125,000. It's really not that. It's not a daily tournament. Have a team that can win your 15-team league. And then once you hit August, once you hit kind of late August, early September, then you can start playing around with the overall standings. But in the first instance, try to win a 15-team league, which is not an easy thing to do. But don't think that you need to pick last year Carlos Correa in the first round because, my God, he could go 40-40, and wouldn't that be awesome? And the upside is crazy. Just pick a team that you think you can win a 15-team league with.
Chuck, I know you play some NFBC. I don't know if you're in the main event this year, but you and I are definitely in a draft champions league, and it's my first time ever using the NFBC format. Do you have any thoughts on this? How have you kind of adjusted your strategies to an NFBC style?
Well, I do definitely agree with them because by the middle of the season, what you're trying to do is if you're doing well in your own league, then you're looking at the overall. It goes in that direction. It's not like you can start the year thinking, oh, well, how am I doing in the overall? I mean, you have to start from the base of doing well in your own league. I certainly understand that. Since I don't know, I'm going to sort of take a question by the horns here. How many times for the main event, how many times can a person get in? Is it only once? Can you answer that for me, Rob?
No, you can enter you can enter every time there is a draft time. So for the main event, I think the maximum you could have would be six teams. But if you want to pay six times, you can take six teams. So the money obviously adds up. It's I think $1,600 to enter right now, but you can enter six times. It's not one lottery ticket. You can buy multiple entries, which gives you a better chance. It doesn't give you a great shot statistically, but no, that does increase the odds a bit.
Yeah, because like guys like Justin and I who are kind of dabbling in NFBC, I almost call it like a lottery ticket. Sometimes I wonder if there's a lot of people who specialize in just that format, which you mentioning that you play a lot of higher stake contests makes me feel like maybe instead of dabbling, you should at least have a certain number of teams just in the hopes, because if you're playing against a lot of people who have 8, 9, 10 different shots at it, and I do think there's a huge variance from league to league. That's what I'm very interested in your thoughts on. Have you noticed that within the 15-team leagues, because the drafts can go so different, do you think there's a huge difference from league to league? Do you need to be in the right league to have a better chance to win the overall? What do you think about that?
A couple of questions I'll pick apart there. First off, one of the big differences between the draft champions and the main event or the 12-team online is draft champions, you draft and you hold. There's no free agency. With the 15-team, every Sunday there's free agent pickups. I don't know about you guys, but most of us have real lives and we have children. We have things going on.
The answer is no to that, by the way.
Okay. I have a real life. Sundays become awful if you have too many teams. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, having multiple teams, and certainly in the online competition, the 12-team that the NFBC runs, you could in theory have 50 different teams. You could be in every single draft. But your Sundays would be awful. And your ability to really concentrate on every single team, I think, at least for me, and everybody's different, there'd be a diminishing return on it. In my experience, in the draft championship drafts and the online drafts, you do get some weak drafters. You get some guys who you can tell are flipping through a magazine pick by pick as you go. So you'll get some fish at the table, to use the term. In the 15-team leagues, I don't think there are weak leagues. There are always 3 or 4 or 5 guys in every single league. Remember, there's only 30 of these leagues total. For 450 teams, there are 30 leagues. I don't think you get lucky. I don't think you find the one draft where, my God, suddenly there are 9 guys who had no idea what they were doing and the 6 other guys got really lucky. That doesn't mean that drafts don't go differently. So the league that I won the overall from last year, for some reason, starting pitching was going later. One of the things that people who do the main event in the NFBC will tell you is by the time you hit late March, when you get to Vegas or when you get to New York or you're online for the main events, forget ADP, because starting pitching in the NFBC main events goes really early. For whatever reason, in the league I won, starting pitching dropped later. It wasn't going crazy. And I was picking at the 15. That helped me out, that starting pitching at the 3-4 turn fell to me. But by definition, as between my first, second turn and the third, fourth turn, there were 29 picks. By definition, there were. So if starting pitching fell, hitting went early. So was that an advantage? Well, it worked out for me. I won the thing. And I was going in planning on taking a starting pitcher there, and I got a better starting pitcher than I might have otherwise. You know, people make their picks, you react to what they do. But it's not because the other players were weak. They just wanted hitters earlier than pitchers, if that makes sense. But no, I don't think in the main event, I don't think there are weak leagues. I don't think you can just get lucky. And the league that I won the overall in had Lindy Hinkleman in it, the only person to win the overall twice. Sean Childs, who's an NFBC Hall of Famer and has finished in the top 10 multiple times, was in my league. So there were tough people in my league, as there is in every single NFBC league.
And to that point, I mean, if you go and look through the NFBC overall standings for the main event, you'll see a number of names that we've had on this podcast. I mean, it's filled with people who are touts, people who are in the industry, and then, of course, people who aren't in the industry but who are just damn good at fantasy baseball. So
it's a lot of friggin' money. Like it's not a bunch of rich guys who are just stupid money dropping it down. You get some of that the same way if you go to the World Series of Poker in Vegas right now. I'm sure there are just some stupid money who don't really know what they're doing. But for most people, $1,600 in a fantasy league is a lot of friggin' money for an entry fee. So you're not doing it if you don't have a sense of what you're doing for the most part.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I think there's probably a lot fewer, at least percentage-wise, of dead money than in the World Series of Poker because there aren't like satellites into
totally. You can't lock your way in.
Yeah, you can't get a $40 buy-in in Chris Moneymaker your way to a championship. So
true that.
Let's talk about you mentioned doing too many leagues, it being distracting. I think kind of is a nice little segue to our next question, and that is because my biggest mistake last year and this year so far is being in too many leagues and not being able to balance them all, especially with my demands here at Friends of Fantasy Benefits and FanGraphs and other places that I work. And so I've definitely found myself being in a position where I'm not doing as well in some leagues because I haven't been able to put all the time into it. So, Rob, I want to ask you, what has been your biggest success so far this season, and what's been your biggest mistake?
Ah, geez. My big success so far this season doesn't exist because the season's still going. So, my big success will be on the last Sunday of the season if either I win or I don't. Big failure, like it's littered, like everybody. Everybody has injury stories this year. I loved Noah Syndergaard coming into this year. That didn't quite work out. So I've lots of injury stories, but nobody cares about those. Everybody has injuries, especially this year with the new 10-day DL. What I'd say to the question is especially in an NFBC type format, is I didn't get to first place in my league last year until late July. I didn't get into the top 10 in the overall until early August, and I didn't get into first place overall until mid-August, and then I never left first place anywhere. So on the one hand, obviously, if you're in 14th place right now, you need a lot of things to go right. You can still do it, but it's really hard. But if you're hanging around there, if you're in 4th, 5th, 6th place, you know, in a 15-team mixed league, if you're at 80, 85 points, there is still so long to go still at this point. It is so easy and it's so tempting at this time of year to start doing football prep. So start turning your mind, you know, baseball hasn't worked out because I'm not winning. So I'm going to start spending, you know, if I have X amount of time to dedicate to fantasy, I'm going to start putting 80% of it to getting ready for my fantasy league, start doing mock drafts, start doing, you know, draft champion style, you know, draft and hold football drafts, and forget about baseball because, you know, I'm in fifth place. You can move up so quickly in baseball still. Categories can move so quickly still at this point of the baseball season.
Darius, you haven't been able to answer too much because you you haven't played NFBC before. But you can answer this question. What's been your biggest success so far, and what's been your biggest failure?
I guess I don't like to say these things too early because it will go horribly wrong. Obviously, I was talking about Robbie Array a lot of preseason. so far, that's going really well. I think, and we've been discussing this in the chat a lot, it does feel a bit like everything is a little bit more random this year, with guys coming out of nowhere like Yonder Alonso and Justin Smoke and changing their approach and all these home runs screwing up a lot of pitches. So I think there's still a long way to go, and it's hard to say that anything, as Rob says, until we get to the end of the year, I think calling something a success or even saying that you believed in somebody and writing them off now is probably a mistake. But I think I'd have to say I probably maybe I think overvalued a few pitchers. Just kind of got that sense that those elite guys were worth paying for, and maybe Scherzer has panned out, but it hasn't really worked out in most cases. And I think people always sort of react to the thing from the year before. So maybe I probably bought a couple of guys a bit too early that I shouldn't have done. And obviously with how volatile pitching has been this year, it hasn't really worked out. And maybe the better strategy was to kind of wait a bit and just go for the high upside guys like Ray, who have kind of cost you very little relative to the top guys and actually have panned out much better.
If we're talking about players we got wrong, one guy who is pissing me off, is killing me, is Hanley Ramirez. And the problem with Hanley, unlike a Noah Syndergaard who's injured, so you can only predict injuries so much, and B, you bench him or you put him on your DL. The problem with Hanley is he is below replacement level in anything other than AL only right now. And yet it's so hard to get him out of your lineup because he's playing for Boston and he's Hanley Ramirez. So week after week, you keep putting him out there and he's killing you because he's doing nothing. And there are so many better options at first base. And those kinds of guys are the real traps because suddenly you've got 400 plate appearances. Not yet, obviously, but why am I benching him next week as opposed to this week on my team? And you keep rolling out Hanley Ramirez until you're in August and you realize Hanley Ramirez is on pace for 50 RBIs, 50 runs, and is hitting 250 and going to hit 15 home runs and has killed you this season. And I thought Hanley was going to be a stud this year, DHing healthy. I thought Boston's lineup was going to be a lot better than they've turned out to be. And those guys, you know, injuries happen, but man, Hanley just pisses me off right now. I wish I could go back to February, Rob, and tell him stay away from Hanley because he's going to suck this year.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I have to say that, you know, my biggest success stories of this year, first of all, I was all over Matt Holliday, especially in my OBP leagues. And that has been very rewarding because the Yankee lineup around him has been so good. And I was right about the fact that he would get rejuvenated some with the league move and playing in that more friendly park. So that has been very nice. But unfortunately, it's been a pretty bad year for me so far, which is unusual in actuality. But the point being is that the biggest mistakes that I made is that I thought that my knowledge of pitching would allow me to wait and take pitchers, you know, not take one of the top four pitchers. And I just wish I had one of those four guys somewhere, because trying to get anything out of, you know, Syndergaard, I did the Syndergaard, Madison Bumgarner, John Lester, and Justin Verlander, and all of these are biting me right now. And to make matters worse, my second tier pitching knowledge, I wouldn't mind. My frustrating player is Julio Teheran. I wouldn't mind if he was bad like he's been in the past, meaning that, you know, he was inconsistent and he had bad streaks and good streaks. But instead, his walk rate is killing him, and this came from absolutely nowhere. There was no way that anyone could have predicted all of a sudden he was going to lead the National League in walks. So, you know, it's been a very, very frustrating grind. Just trying to keep my head up. And I do have a couple leagues, like, which I appreciate, Rob's pep talk, where I'm in fourth or fifth, and maybe a couple successes there could help salvage what little silver lining appears to be left at this point.
Yeah, I won't talk too much about some of my successes, except for to mention the fact that I am still absolutely dominating the Barf League, which is the San Francisco-based industry league, with a number of friends of this podcast. And so I've got, I believe, about a 30-point lead in a 12-team league. So
that's awesome.
And I've been pretty much going wire to wire. I think I've only not led or been in first in that league for two complete days. Hopefully I'll be able to pull that one off, and the CBS AL-only industry league, which I'm currently in second, just made a big trade. So in terms of, I mentioned one of my failures in terms of having too many leagues, and that's something I'm going to continue to look at in the future. I didn't take as many chances this year on guys with really high upside, and A lot of those guys have put together really nice years. I'm talking about Eric Thames and Cody Bellinger and Trey Turner. I drafted a little bit more conservatively than I probably should have this year, and I think I'd probably be winning or be in contention in a few more leagues than I am this year had I taken some more chances and balanced maybe some of the risk a little bit later on. Let's talk about the kind of the home run surplus. We're seemingly every year kind of adding to that, and one of my bold predictions coming to the year is that would regress back. It's done the exact opposite. Rob, how does this kind of affect your draft strategy moving forward, and does it mean Billy Hamilton types take a kind of a step in value?
It's a great question, and it's one I don't think there is a right answer to that, in the sense that you need stolen bases, and you can approach. I like, when I'm thinking about draft strategy before in the winter, start with the stolen base question, which is how do I want or how do I plan on getting my stolen bases. You can go after Billy Hamilton. You can go after Jose Peraza. You can go after those guys. There is an opportunity cost, obviously, in doing that. And Billy Hamilton was going relatively early. I think he was arguably worth it. And if you draft a Billy Hamilton, you obviously can but need to build the rest of your team out by taking basically no home runs from spot. There are other really successful NFBC players who won't draft the rabbits, who won't draft the zero home run guys, and they need to find stolen bases elsewhere. Last year, my team that won, and again, I know it to some people it's obnoxious talking about it, but I guess that's the reason I'm on. I left the draft table thinking I was okay in stolen bases. But I also thought Byron Buxton, who I took in the 11th round, was going to get me 30. And needless to say, by the time Byron Buxton came back in September, he was long off my team. So I left the draft table in retrospect with basically no stolen bases. But I found two guys named Hernan Perez and Keon Broxton midseason on the waiver wire, and they saved my Canadian bacon in terms of stolen bases. So there's lots of different ways to approach stolen bases. In terms of home runs, there are the Yonder Alonzos, there are the Justin Smokes, there are the Aaron Judges who are emerging, quote unquote, out of nowhere. But the other big change, obviously, the last two, three seasons are the second baseman who you used to think were going to get you 8 to 10 home runs, who are now getting you 15 to 20 home runs. That's the other change. Is it's amazing if you stumble into an Aaron Judge. It's game-changing. It's awesome if that happens. I didn't land one of those guys last year. There was nobody. The guys who emerged for me were not those types of players. It's amazing if you can, but you can't. That's not a strategy. You can't count on getting those guys. I think the real thing some people are missing is catcher. It's 14-team roster. NFBC uses standard two-catcher type of roster. If you're taking basically zeros at catcher, so you're playing with 12 players and everybody else is playing with 14 or 13 and a half or 12 and three quarters, you're at a big disadvantage, and you can make up for it. And I don't therefore mean that you need to take Buster Posey where he went or the top catchers, but I think you need some production from catcher. And I think if you're writing off catcher and you have a Billy Hamilton or a Billy Hamilton like player, then you're suddenly down to 11 hitters who are being productive. And on a per batter basis, you're suddenly at a point where you really need to do better than I do. And I'm just not smart enough to have 11 batters do better than your 14 batters. I don't have that kind of a crystal ball in most leagues.
That's a really, really interesting point. Darius, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's a real conundrum, I think, in terms of just how quickly we've seen the league change on the home front. And I think it's probably a mistake to assume that it's going to stay the same next year and we're just going to kind of see them continue to rise, or at least have this many guys with as much power as we've seen. The ball could change again. It seems like it's changed once. Who knows if it will change back? And pitchers could obviously learn to adapt to the way that hitters are approaching them now. So I think that's one thing to bear in mind. I think we talked about this in terms of stolen bases preseason and not overreacting to that. And I do think in terms of guys like Hamilton, there is a value to that, to sort of picking them up and almost not having to worry about it the rest of the way. But as Rob says, there's a lot to make up for there as well. And I think it comes down to what kind of player you are, really, how good you are, you think, kind of balancing the rest of your roster. Whether you're confident in making up for what Hamilton doesn't give you elsewhere, and he isn't a particularly good hitter, obviously. And I think that's quite hard for a lot of fantasy players to get past, in terms of if you just look at his actual baseball line, it looks pretty ugly. And I think that's certainly difficult for me. When I look at Hamilton's line, I'm like, well, I know what he's going to give me, but I also can kind of see the penalty I'm going to get in the other categories. So I think you need to know as a player how you construct your rosters and whether you're confident in being able to identify 4, 5, 6 guys who can make up the steals for you, or if you'd rather just have one guy like Hamilton or Peraza and kind of set it and forget it. So I think it's about knowing yourself, knowing how active you are on the waivers. Obviously, you can't trade an NFBC, but if it is a league in which you can trade, whether you're good at making in-season trades to make up for your deficits if the draft doesn't work out, and kind of taking it from there.
Chuck, give me your thoughts on this, because this was originally your question that you came up with.
Well, I think players used to be easier to delineate, which is something I think Rob was kind of getting to in a roundabout way. And you used to have guys that were boppers, you know, but they might hurt your batting average. Then you had 5-category guys. And then you had, you know, well, you could pick up the middle infielders and hope to pick up some speed there and a couple speed guys, and you were good. And I don't feel like we're moving in that direction. We're seeing more like hybrid players floating around. And my reaction, and I'm always reactionary, you guys know this, is that I think there's a lot of people next year that are going to say to themselves, well, you know, I don't have to worry that much about power because everybody's hitting for power. Whereas my reaction to that is boy, I need to get the best power guys I can get to give myself a little leeway for the people who fall off. In a number of my leagues this year, I drafted Justin Turner to supplement power. Okay? And how has that worked out for me? There's nothing more frustrating than watching LA fans, you know, hang up Justin Turner for MVP signs while I'm thinking the reason I drafted him is absolutely killing me. You know, so to me, I guess I'm looking for that extra leeway. So when we have Aaron Judge discussions and you guys say, well, everybody hits for power, I'm thinking to myself, well, I want the guy who might hit 55 home runs, not the guy whose upside is 35 to 40 home runs, because I want those extra 20 home runs.
Well,
so,
I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
I think it's a great point, and I'd reframe it just slightly, but I agree with the sentiment you're putting entirely, which is I assume going into a season that I'm not going to get lucky / be brilliant and find the Aaron Judge. He may end up on my team, but again, that's not a strategy. I know those guys will emerge because they do every year, and they did 10 years ago. They did 5 years ago. There have always been guys who just come out of nowhere and emerge. But there's no reason to think they're going to just happen to be on my team. We all put together sleeper lists every winter, but we're throwing darts to some extent. We all know that that we are. So what I want, which I think was to your point, I want a 30 to 40 home run cushion coming out of the draft in projections. I know my projections aren't perfect. I know there's going to be big variance. But if I have a 30 to 40 home run cushion, similar with RBIs and runs, then even if you have Aaron Judge and I don't, I've got enough of a cushion that it shouldn't matter. I can be okay if I don't get lucky and find the guy who came out of nowhere.
All right. Let's talk about pitching, because coming into last year, all the talk was that pitching that you needed to push pitchers up higher. That there was a huge kind of discrepancy between the first couple tiers and the lower couple tiers. This year, we've run into pitcher injuries and uncertainty more than ever before. Rob, does that mean you're going to wait or be more aggressive next year in terms of pitching?
This again will be the thing I think we're all going to be talking about next winter. And the people who drafted Madison Bumgarner at the 1-2 turn are going to say, I will never draft a starting pitcher early again. It's crazy. I'm going hitting, and I'm going to hope to get Robbie Ray late. And that's reasonable. The guy who drafted Max Scherzer early, he was brilliant today, almost got a no-hitter even though he didn't get the win, will say, man, having an ace like Max Scherzer really makes the whole season go better. In a format like the NFBC, where, again, there is no one way to win. You can win lots of different ways. It's a crappier hot take on a podcast saying you can win lots of ways. If I said this is my five-step way to guaranteed win the NFBC, it'll sell more books, it'll get more downloads, but it's BS. It's not true. I think I know pitching pretty well, but I also know lots of other people in the league know pitching pretty well. And I know that for me to win, having two stud pitchers gives me a much better odd than hoping I get really lucky later. So I go into most drafts wanting either Clayton Kershaw, if I have the 1-2 pick, or two really good starting pitchers who I consider anchor pitchers. And I also know there's a pretty good chance if one of those two anchor pitchers either gets hurt, which we all know has always been the case with starting pitchers, they have a higher injury rate than hitters do, or busts, cough Justin Verlander so far this year, that my odds of winning go down very quickly. But the converse is, if I go in and don't draft those two stud pitchers, my odds of winning are really dependent on me getting lucky with late pitching, and I don't like having to rely on luck later to win. So I think I'll probably go in. I'm not going to push them earlier next year. I expect the ADP for starters will come down a little bit because of all the bad luck and because of the 10-day DL, assuming there's no changes there for next year, which, given the collective agreement, there won't be. So I think I'll be doing more or less the same thing next year, which is you gotta, if you want to win the overall, for me, draft pitchers relatively early.
Darius, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think you kind of have to do what Rob said in terms of the guys who are elite, who you can have absolute confidence in their skills, and maybe it doesn't feel like there are that many of those guys right now, which I guess just makes them even more valuable. But we know what Kershaw is and Scherzer, and I know Bumgarner's annoyed a lot of people by getting hurt, but he was one of the most consistent pitchers over the last 5 years or so. And Syndergaard, obviously, I think he will be fine when he comes back, and as long as he's healthy, and the Mets are looking like they're not going to have any reason to rush him back at this point. So I think those guys are going to be just as valuable, and I'll probably still be looking to get one of those. Again, I think you've got to think about the context. If it's the kind of league where you know it's going to be easy to pick up somebody else, if your, you know, 2, 3, 4 dart throws in the later rounds don't work out, then that's fine, and maybe you can get away with not taking so many of the more reliable guys. But I think it's really quite valuable to get one of those top guys if you're in a deeper league and you know it's going to be hard. If you do it, have a couple of dart throws and neither of them pan out, and then you're sat there thinking, well, I don't have an ace, and I don't know where I'm going to get one from because everybody's competing in FAB for the, you know, 3 or 4 starters who look like they might be worth something. So I think knowing your format and knowing your league mates and figuring out how difficult it's going to be to find those guys should factor into it as well.
Chuck, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm a guy who tries to zig while other people are zagging. And what you guys know about me just from talking to me on a weekly basis. But this year, what I really tried to do is I tried to get the guys that I thought might be bargains at the top of the draft, and then add 2 or 3 or 4 stock up on bats early and then take pitchers in the middle rounds that I like, and I like their upside, and hope that at least a couple of them hit. Well, the reason that that strategy works so poorly is because, you know, the bargain top tier guys haven't turned out to be very good. Both, like I said before, you know, Lester and Baumgartner, you know, and Verlander, Tanaka, those guys didn't turn out very good. Then the guys that I gambled on in the second tier didn't turn out great either, meaning that, you know, Aaron Sanchez, Fulmer has been decent compared to the other guys I'm talking about. I had a little bump in the road recently. But those Tehran, the guys that I liked in the middle that I thought I could, you know, conglomerate into that second ace, that hasn't worked either. So my reactionary take to it, and I mentioned this in the chat room earlier, is that I feel like I've got to get one of the top four guys that I really, really believe in. And that has me doing something relatively crazy in within my thought process and moving a guy like Corey Kluber, you know, into the top 17 or 18 picks, saying that I got to have one of those guys that I think if he's healthy, he's going to be a stud no matter what. And I've noticed that there's a lot of resistance to that. But I'm also saying that how your recent history goes will affect your drafting, which is, of course, dangerous because next year is not this year. But at the same time, I think it does have a natural carryover effect, sometimes for the good and sometimes for the bad.
But yeah. But I think we also need to be honest. Again, looking back at the team that won the NFBC overall last year, I was, as I mentioned earlier, going to take a starting pitcher at the 3-4 turn. And ADP, if everybody can cast their mind back to, you know, 16 months ago, ADP back then, the pitchers who should have been there would have been Carlos Carrasco, Chris Archer. Because pitchers were sliding a little bit in this league, Carrasco actually was gone to me by then. But the two pitchers that were on the board at the 3-4 turn were Corey Kluber, who you just mentioned, and a guy by the name of Matt Harvey. And right now, in 2017, everybody giggles, ha ha ha, Matt Harvey. Mm-hmm. Last spring, so again, 15 months ago, Matt Harvey was the hottest, sexiest pitcher in spring training. I already had Max Scherzer on my team, and the concept of having, you know, two NL East studs who are going to get me 500 strikeouts while dominating Philadelphia and Atlanta, Matt Harvey and Max Scherzer, what seemed to me to be just gold. Like, I couldn't believe Harvey was sitting there for me. But I had Corey Kluber ranked, I think, sixth or seventh starting pitcher. Harvey was a couple of spots down. Typically in straight drafts, I'm the annoying guy who takes about 3.5 seconds to make every single pick. You don't want to draft next to me only because you're always on the clock. I just make picks. This was one of those rare times where I took the entire clock, and I ended up trusting my rankings and taking Kluber out of Harvey. It worked out. I'm not trying to make myself look smart. My point just was, I could just as easily have taken Matt Harvey. It was 51-49. Harvey was so sexy last spring. And needless to say, if I take Harvey instead of Kluber, I don't win $125,000. And so my point just is, let's not pretend there isn't a lot of luck involved with starting pitchers too.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. And I think what's going to happen in terms of what you mentioned in terms of the industry being reactionary is that is pretty common. It's what happened 2 years ago with starting pitching, is the industry got extremely reactionary and too far so. And I think that'll probably be where I zig while other people zag, is I will try my best not to follow the herd as much. You know, I'm going to have to make changes in the way that I draft starting pitching to kind of accommodate the 10-day DL, to accommodate the amount of pitching injuries we had. But this has also been kind of a historic year in terms of injuries. And if we expect that to continue, I think we're being a little bit foolhardy as well. So
it's running backs, wide receivers, and football. Like, that's yep. How we are. And there's something very human about just, you know, recency bias. So it's It's not look how stupid everybody is. That's how we are, is we look at last year and we react to that.
Oh, and especially when everybody's talking about it, because that'll be the main big topic, is injuries and pitching injuries, and people will hear everybody talking about it over and over and reading everybody's article about it. It gets ingrained and it becomes becomes a little bit too prevalent within the industry, and that's when you'll see these huge swings. Let's talk. We talked a little bit about things for next year, but I want to kind of bring back a topic before we talk a little bit of three sport on things you can do this year. Is it too late to catch up in the ratio categories, Rob?
No, especially on the pitching side of things. You can still make up big room with ERA and WHIP. The mistake people make is if, let's say, right now you're hanging around a 4 ERA and you need to get to a 3.65, 3.7 to make up points to win your league, is they think, I need to start chasing two-start pitchers, even really risky, really dodgy two-start pitchers, because, man, look at that, those two matchups, and I need just volume to make up the difference. What they don't realize is, one, you're taking on even more risk, and two, the more innings you have on your staff, the less important the good pitcher you have already on your team matters. So let's say you have Max Scherzer on your team right now, and the rest of your staff has been hurt and sucks. Max Scherzer, if your entire team has 1,000 innings, is going to be roughly 25% of your total innings. That has a huge impact. If you get up to 1,500 innings, Max Scherzer is suddenly, 17-18% of your innings, meaning you've just diminished his contribution to ERA and WHIP by, you know, whatever percent that is. So I think you can make up the room. What you want to do is get quality starts. You don't want to get volume of starts. The problem, of course, with that is if you're also trying to make up strikeouts and wins. Strikeouts and wins, by definition, is a volume play. So it's really hard to make up all four of those categories at the same time. But if you're strong in strikeouts and wins and not so strong in the ratio categories, then manage your innings and get quality starts, not volume of starts, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense, and I think you pretty much nailed it. Darius, anything you'd like to add on?
That's pretty much spot on. I think I would say to people, don't panic. Don't do things differently because you're behind. Pick the guys who you think have got good matchups. As Rob says, don't just flood these guys to find the two-start guys. Feel like you're trying to catch up. Obviously, you are behind, but that doesn't mean you need to start more players and kind of leak out the those innings that your elite guys are getting. You don't want to dilute those. So I think, just treat it as you would normally treat it and pick the good matchups and don't panic. And if you get to the middle of September, and then you can work out exactly how many starts you're likely to need to actually make up a gap, then it's a different matter. But at this point in the season, just pick the good matchups, use the good pitchers, and don't panic too much.
Chuck, anything you'd like to add on this one before we talk some three sport?
Yeah, just that you have to have some amnesia, meaning that don't get too down on where you are right now, and remember that Irvin Santana, who is now turned back into a toad, someone else is turning into a prince as he turns back into a toad, meaning that. All of a sudden, pitchers that you have that have struggled doesn't mean that they're not going to suddenly turn it around, and maybe that's going to help make up that that ratio gap that you that has been hurting you so bad to this point. Because pitchers are so maddeningly inconsistent at times. You have to remember that some pitchers are going to finish as strong as they've started poorly. So it's just keep your chin up. Kind of message, and don't forget that you got to go with your guts. I mean, the guys that have been good, guys that have shown talent, usually by the end of the year, that talent usually comes forward. Usually. Oh.
All right, I want to talk some three sport before we have to get out of here and wrap this up and get out of here. Rob, was this your first year in the League of Leagues?
This was our first year in the League of Leagues. I had never, I had played lots of baseball, lots of football. Hadn't been in a fantasy basketball pool for at least a decade. So that was, I was kind of faking it there. But first time in League of Leagues.
Okay, and so Chuck and I are in a three sport league. It's a little bit different configuration, but same idea. Three sports. You can draft anybody at any time. You can trade between leagues, and then the overall prizes are given out based on your finishes in all three leagues combined. So I want to ask you kind of what your strategy was and if you feel like it was the correct strategy to employ.
Too soon to say whether it was the correct strategy because we're just getting started with baseball. Our strategy, so it's a 14-team league, the League of Leagues, which, you know, basketball is already, we thought, very star-heavy. You make it a 14-team basketball league, which my understanding is most basketball fantasy leagues are 12 teams. Mm-hmm. So you combine those two things, and like a lot of teams in the League of Leagues, basketball went, you know, early and often in the draft. Our thinking was football was the most random of the three sports in the sense that it's a pure head-to-head scoring. And we figured that both between just the nature of week-to-week head-to-head, make the playoffs, I think the top eight teams or six, I think it's eight teams make the playoffs. And then there's a randomness to that as well. So we figured not punt football, but push football as much as possible. There's also obviously the most devastating injuries, I think it's fair to say, in football. So we hit basketball hard early and then baseball and then football. When I look now, and part of the problem was you said you draft in July. We drafted in March. And my head was not in football at all back in March. So I look now that I'm getting into football at the 14-team that I have for the football season coming up. And if you left a real football draft with this, you'd be like, so who was your first pick? Because, you know, I didn't take a football player, I think, till the eighth round. But for other than that small thing that you didn't have a first round pick, it's a decent football team for a punt. So we'll see. I feel pretty good about it. But I'd be curious about your guys' strategy, given that you have a lot more experience with this kind of thing than I do.
Well, this is we're finishing up my third season in this league, and we're about to start drafting the fourth. This was Chuck's first season. So Chuck, I'm going to throw it to you. What was your strategy? And what went wrong? Because it's gone horribly wrong for you.
Well, thank you so much.
You're really soft-pedaling that.
Yeah, right?
Well, oddly enough, I took some positives from what's happened in the three-sport league this year. I do feel like I took a very similar approach to what Rob's team took, in so much as I hadn't played fantasy basketball since Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant were first-round draft picks.
Right.
So it had been a long time. So I thought I needed to focus on basketball early, much like he said. Then I thought the randomness of football was going to help me. But my punt football, we play football first. My punt football strategy blew up in my face very, very early and often, as I had too many Jacksonville Jaguars, which I wasn't the only person in the country who did that. But at the same time, it was a pretty blatant error. And so the odd thing about our format is that if your football team stinks, then you might as well try to win either basketball or baseball because you have no chance to do well in the overall. And so I put all my eggs in the baseball basket, and I do think I have an unbelievable team in baseball, but it was Madison Bumgarner based, which is one of the things that's really hurt me again. And closers have kicked my butt in every league as well, including this league. So I'm in the running in baseball. And basketball, by the way, I was doing very, very well until the Jabari Parker injury. I'm pretty happy with what I learned in basketball this year, and I think I did a pretty good job drafting basketball considering the layoff that I had. I just had to punt basketball in the middle once Parker got hurt because I wasn't going to win the sport. So I don't think I'm doing as bad as it might first appear. But it's fascinating, that's for sure.
Do you guys have a lot of trades between sports in your league?
Yes, and that is where my success has come in this year. Because my first 2 years, I dominated baseball, and I did very well in football. which isn't unsurprising because I'm, you know, my two strongest sports are baseball and football, and I analyze them somewhat for a living. And I know nothing, absolutely nothing about basketball. My first ever experience in fantasy basketball was this three sport league. And it really showed. And so I finished, I believe, dead last in the first 2 years in basketball and won baseball both years. And I believe finished second or third in football each time. And so what I did to adjust my strategy this year was similar. I definitely wanted to draft a strong basketball team because it is very star driven. And I know very little about it. And so I didn't want to have to have to worry too much about my knowledge in terms of picking guys up. But I kind of, I drafted heavier depending on which leagues were first. And so football is first for us. So I drafted a pretty heavy football team and then kind of a heavy to medium heavy basketball team and then a very, very light baseball team. And my thinking was this. My strongest sport was baseball. I knew I could make up a team in baseball later on, especially because people who weren't going to be winning or going for the overall because they were already out of it, having performed too poorly in basketball and football, would give up. And baseball is a marathon, and people do give up kind of mid-season if their team isn't doing very well. And I figured I could at least draft certain categories fairly well and gain points there to at least keep me mid-pack. And then I was going to attempt to dominate in football and basketball. And what I ended up doing was finishing second in both football and basketball. And I'm doing just well enough that I am competing with one other guy in baseball for the overall league championship. And I traded from sport to sport. So as soon as I had a nice little a big lead in football, I traded guys to basketball, and I built a pretty decent basketball team. And then I really loaded up on basketball by sacrificing baseball. And so Chuck, who had that dominant team in basketball but wasn't going to win the league, which is where you get money, traded me a lot of his players, and I ended up being able to pass a lot of the guys in basketball and really give myself a pretty strong team. And so that was my strategy. Because if you draft a really strong whatever sport you have last, you have no opportunity to trade into the next season. And so that I believe you should probably you load up on your earliest sport and then trade into the following seasons.
So is yours a keep? Is there any keeper aspect?
No, it is completely redraft.
Okay. So do people just give up in the last sport? Like, are people just tuned out if they have no shot?
Yeah,
at that?
Very similar to some baseball leagues.
Yeah, no, it's again, it's real life.
Yeah, exactly. You know, people don't have a chance to win, and they just completely give up.
Rob, I'd also like to point out a subtle difference that well, we're making it into a subtle difference, but it really isn't. Us drafting in July versus you drafting in March. When I drafted my first NBA team in 10 years, right? In July, there's no basketball stuff anywhere. Mm-hmm. None. There's nothing. In March, basketball season is going. So you can see who
has been good.
Who has been good, who's playing well. I mean, and so I didn't even know until 2 weeks before the draft that I was going to be in the draft. Yeah. So then all of a sudden in 2 weeks, I'm trying to understand, and ours is 14 teams as well, who the 160th best basketball player might be. And I'm literally searching through RotoWire going, well, they say some flyer upside next year. And so I'm taking guys and people are laughing at me. I remember Alan Anderson was the guy at the end of the draft. People are like laughing. Like, why would you possibly take him? I'm like, I don't know. You know, I think that seems like a subtle difference, but in a way it's not. Okay. I think it's bigger than you might think.
Whereas in March when we did the League of Leagues, even there are some guys who are really football than basketball in the League of Leagues. Everybody is into baseball mode, even if you're not a baseball guy. You can pick up – you can go to any website and get decent baseball rankings at that point. Same way that if you were starting this in August – there are football, you know, everybody can pick up a magazine or pick up a website and get a decent set of football rankings. You may not be awesome, but you can be competitive if you pick up basic rankings.
Well, you'll like this because with the other thing about drafting in July is the full breakouts haven't completely happened. So I got Trey Turner as the 140th baseball player off the board last year, which, you know, was a heck of a start. And people offered me trades for Turner right after the draft. They were already started. So, well, like I said, that when it happens, it does make a difference.
The only thing I would like, and I know we have to wrap up, is as great as the League of Leagues or kind of the three-sport format is in a straight draft, what I'd love to try one time is the same thing only in auction.
I would do that. I if you get that together, you let me know.
It would take like 7 weeks to finish. Not quite, but it would be a marathon. But like, we had the first pick overall. We took Russ Westbrook with the first pick. Which is a big advantage. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's say there was a $700 budget for your three sports rosters. I don't know what Westbrook or Harden or those top basketball players are worth. They're worth whatever somebody's willing to pay mm-hmm. for them, like any auction. But that would be fascinating. If you wanted to really punt a sport and spend $10 on your entire football roster, 10 $1 players, and have the rest of the budget, you know, all of those kinds of strategy that an auction brings in, that would be a fun draft.
Yeah, like I said, if you ever get something like that together, DM me. I'll be all over that. And Jonah, if you're listening and you're looking for a person next year, I might be interested as well.
There you go.
All right, that is going to wrap us up. Rob, thank you for joining us.
Tons of fun. Enjoyed it, guys.
Definitely. Again, let people know where you can be reached. And plug yourself a little bit if you've got anything going on outside of just winning NFBC tournaments.
It's at Rob Silver on Twitter, and I can quickly set up a PayPal account if anybody wants to transfer me money for no random reason. But no, I'm on Twitter at Rob Silver.
Chuck, what are you working on? Where can you be reached?
Well, I am working on my Of Note column, which I put up on the FWFB. I'm trying to do two of them this week, since last week we flooded out in the region I was in, and I didn't get a chance to do one, which I promised I would, so I want to get back on pace. Other than that, I'm at Just Chucking It. I'm looking forward to following Rob and learning something about Canadian politics.
I apologize in advance.
It's pretty great, especially if you do not like Kevin O'Leary. Darius, where can you reach? What are you working on?
You can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I already have a PayPal account if people want to send me money. I've been working on some stuff over at Batflips and Nerds. We've got a few guys, Cliff Floyd, Carlos Pena, coming over for the home run derby on July the 4th. I'm kind of doing some profiles up on them. And I'm going to be doing some more kind of second half stuff over at FWF being next week, looking ahead for guys you might want to pick up. So keep an eye out for that.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Though our PayPal account is justinmasonfantasy@gmail.com, and feel free to send that as much money as you want. You can read all that I write on FanGraphs, where I write 4 to 5 times a week. I'm actually writing, I think, 7 articles this week covering Paul Sporas. He heads on vacation. But I just had an article go up on FanGraphs about an hour and a half ago that focuses on the worst kind of people in trades. It's gotten a lot of comments so far, so I'm looking forward to going and reading those. So go check that out. You can read the rest of my stuff on friendsoffantasybenefits.com, and you can hear me on my radio show on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, 8 to 10 p.m. on Thursdays with Laura Michaels for the Tout Wars Hour. And I'm going to be having a couple more announcements of other things, projects, places I'll be working here in the near future, because I don't have enough free time. I must fill it with other obligations. And that will wrap us up. Rob, good luck in the main event. Hopefully you can take down another title, because that'd be real cool to win it 2 years in a row.
Thanks, and I hope he totally Wally Pip Sporer while he's on vacation. I hope he comes back, and you've done such a kick-ass job that Sporer like just has nothing left when he comes back. the Lou Gehrig of Fangraphs.
Yeah, I don't want his job at Fangraphs. He does. I mean, those who follow.
Who knows if Lou Gehrig really wanted Wally Pipp's job? Like, you know, you.
Yeah, I would not want the amount he has on his plate. He's like one of the few people in the industry that does more than me. So.
I joke about Paul only because I love him.
He's a great dude. One of my favorite people in the industry. So good luck in the main event this year.
I appreciate it.
Hopefully we can have you on kind of in the preseason next year to go over some more kind of preseason strategy, because that would be really cool.
I'd love to.
All right, that will wrap us up then. For Chuck, Darius, Rob, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.